I'm Kevin. I am a web developer. That's how I identify myself. How many of you are C# developers? How many of you are VB.NET developers? I'm sorry. How many would call yourselves a web developer? Now, how many of you would call yourself a web developer before C# developer? Okay. How many of you enjoy writing JavaScript? Not many. Okay. It's going to be a tough room. So, how many of you use jQuery as your go-to library for JavaScript development? I'm sorry. One of the things that you get, and this is very common, I've done it, I'm sure everybody does it. Someone will come in and say, we want this on the site or our app or whatever, and they've seen a widget out there. So you go, you Google it, you find the jQuery plugin, you copy and paste it and put it in your code base, you put the script references in, and you have the widget. You know, 4 weeks later, they come in, well, now we've got this, we want it to do this. And then the next thing you know, you've got a fork of somebody else's plugin that you didn't write. Their use cases aren't the same as yours. It's this big monstrosity that you're having to edit and put together. And, you know, you've got to track your own script files, your dependencies. Maybe you're doing something in your build process that's munging them all together. Maybe not. There has got to be a better way than this. And then the next thing you know, you've got three other plugins on the page. Maybe they're fighting each other, maybe they aren't, but you don't have that consistency, and you've got these big monolithic plugins that they often do a lot of the same thing. That's not really ideal. So it doesn't have to be that way. JavaScript is better than that. It gives you a lot of power to start mixing things in. You don't have to have these big monstrosities. You want to create nice reusable components. When you write your C# or VB code, you use a using statement and you bring in the libraries that you need just by saying, I want, you know, using system.whatever, you get what you need. And you just get what you need. Why can't you do that with JavaScript? Actually, you can. You don't get it by default. There are things that eventually, coming down, there will be things to help you get this. But if you have used, who's used Modernizer? I know it ships in ASP.NET MVC now. That also has a conditional loader to help load in some of the polyfills. Similar concept, but what you've got here is when you build your modules, you build them in a composable, reusable way. And you'd have a script loader on the page that's going to bring in just what you need. So you don't have that all.js file in your page anymore. Let's face it, we've all had it. Every script in your site all concatenated into one file. How many of you done that? Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. Oh, come on. Somebody's not being honest out there. That's not ideal. What you want to do is be able to mix in things. You want to basically treat your JavaScript development and your CSS development. That's really scary for us developers, CSS. You want to treat that with the same diligence and the same capabilities as you treat your C# and your VB code. I mean, why not? We have the technology. As a simple example, I'm going to show you a page using a concept of a mix-in. Nothing. Exactly. Let's go to the console. And, oh joy, oh, that's just a plug-in, ignore that error, the joys of public Wi-Fi. Okay, so we've got here some object do else, what's going on here? So if we look in our mix-in sample, I've got one object here. Everybody read that, do I need to make it bigger? Okay, let's see. Is that better? Okay, cool. So we've got our first object, it's just, an object literal, next object, and then the third, I'm mixing. Now that's great. It's, you know, that's very similar, like saying you were using a, that's nothing major, but then you mix multiple objects in. I'm just pushing in multiple methods. Now imagine you build a widget that you've got, maybe something that does some showing and hiding. Maybe something else that handles the content management of where things are placed at in your widget. Another widget that handles your animations. You know, you've got these little bitty libraries that you've all of a sudden have cut out. Now imagine being able to pull those in and creating something with those in one line. We've got here, now I am, if anybody has ever talked to me, you know I am a big fan of the YUI framework. It's one of the few JavaScript libraries out there that admit it's JavaScript. It's written for JavaScript by JavaScript developers. If you look at something like, you know, back in the day, Prototype was written for Ruby developers. MochiKit was written for Python developers. jQuery was written for designers. You've got these things, and this embraces what JavaScript is. So if we look here, let me show you some examples of what I'm talking about. Let's look at what makes a module. And within this is a concept used in YUI. They were doing it 3 years ago. Who's heard of require.js? And AMD, asynchronous module definitions, where, you know, it is starting to come into mainstream. So the teams at Yahoo have been doing this for four years now. You've got here, one simple line can give you a lot of power. I'm just, in this instance, I am creating a widget by calling a create method, assigning it a parent, and then I'm mixing in all these other capabilities. And then I'm saying where they're coming from, just like a using statement, except it's at the bottom as opposed to the top. I only need one file. Well, technically I lie at the moment. My demonstration only includes two files, your UE seed file and your definition for this module. And then all of a sudden you go to a page, and now this is a copy of a widget in the YUI framework. It's one line and a couple of lines of CSS as well behind it. And the next thing you know, you can get from that one line of code, where is Chrome? See here. This is just using that statement in here. Note my example, I'm sorry, I called it a popover here. In the YUI library, it's called an overlay. And then you just set some properties, and the next thing you know, you've got a little loading indicator thing going on, pulling in some content. And that's the behavior of that is encapsulated in different items. You've got here, you've got the concept of constraining that is in its own widget. Where you've got the one your one node, in which case this is the overlay, your loading screen is actually constrained to the dimensions of another node in your DOM. And that's just a widget, and you can get that in anything you bring that in. Also, you can plug in things for animation, and you get these things for free by composing the objects correctly. You don't have interfaces in JavaScript because there's really no strong concept of type. So what you do is you still program into an interface. You say, hey, this is what this is, but it's not strict. It's a little more open and flexible about it. But then you can also do, with the same code, do something like creating tooltips. Exact same widget. And the only thing that I'm doing is I'm doing a little bit of event binding. And here, we've seen more concepts coming into play that you can mix in with your items. You've got here the standard positioning, the widget concept. Now, when I talk about a widget, one of the things that define a widget, and this isn't just in the UE library. Anyone here heard of OOCSS, object-oriented CSS? Okay, tough room. Basically, what that does, that creates reusable CSS components. And a lot of the concepts within that, you want to define your markup. I mean, it's the web. You're very similar. Maybe the sizes are different in certain areas, but think about how many repeating patterns you see on a web page. You want to keep things as simple as possible. So you separate your certain designs from others. You know, you've got your hard and fast things that make that particular item there, but your rules about where something's positioned is a little bit more flexible. but you have a module pattern. And I have a couple of examples here. You've just got, you know, a header, a body, and a footer. And every little module can conform to that. It doesn't have to. Sometimes that doesn't make sense. But again, you know, if you look at it in the structure, and even in the structure of HTML5, you'd have an article, you'd have a header, you'd have the body, and then you'd have a footer. That's just your markup you see on a page. Very similar structure. The YUI is very similar. They just use some widget. They just use some. They prepend some stuff to the class names. And that gives you the power with that, is if you look back at the... Yeesh. Lost it. So if you look at that, that's the widget standard mod. So you get everything. You know you've got a header, footer, and you always depend on it. You can depend on it because you know you've required it and your module supports it. So again, it's like programming to an interface. Position as well. And the stack is how, you know, when you've got something like an overlay or a lightbox, like I'll show you another example using the exact same code with just a little bit of CSS changed as from the first one. Next thing you know, you got a lightbox. Who's grabbed lightboxes off the internet and used in your projects? Have you looked at the code involved in that? Have you tried to make it flexible? That I did I literally did that in 3 minutes. Just a bit of CSS. That's how flexible this was. So yeah, and also that's just, I mean, I've neatened this code out so you can actually read it. But I mean, it's just instantiation and opening. I mean, and that's what you get. And that's all from, like I say, a simple concept of basically taking multiple, it's almost like multiple inheritance, you know, in a developer sense, is that you've got these things you've got, you don't need, it's on, maybe, you know, for an example in .NET, it would be like, you know, multiple generics, or some of the things that you can get around with that. Excuse me. Sorry. Forgot. So yeah, that really gives you a lot of flexibility in the code that you write. And all of a sudden, because I mean, obviously, you know, by the show of hands, you don't really enjoy writing JavaScript, so why not write as little as possible when you can? And then all of a sudden, you can change it only little bits, and then you get those changes for free in your other ones. And you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to keep track of your script tags. You've got a little bit of metadata that says, hey, my modules require this. And then the dependency chain can be resolved through whatever. And again, like I say, my samples are using the YUI framework. Require.js and other systems out there have this as well. I know Dojo now implements something similar to this. I've seen there's been talk that there's a fork of jQuery that someone's done something similar to this. So, you know, don't think that just because I use the YUI framework, and you should use the YUI framework. Because, again, it's good developer practice. I mean, how many of you would just copy and paste lines of code in your C# files from the internet? But we do it all the time with JavaScript. Why is that okay and not okay for C#? So, but, you know, and that's nice for visuals. But let's face it, JavaScript, your pages have got a lot more JavaScript in them now, don't they? I mean, you know, anybody building single page apps now, you know, using something like Backbone or any number of other, tough crowd. Yeah, but you've got more and more functionality is starting to go onto the client. And even in Windows 8 apps, if you're writing HTML and JavaScript apps, you know, you're going to need more than what you're going to get out of the box. Or, you know, you bring in plugins from the web. You've got tools here to give you good composable JavaScript just like you would with C#. So we've got here. But there's more to it than that. With a complex application like a single page app where you've got your view, you've got your models and your views and things like that, suppose you've got a concept of your model and you want to be able to save off somewhere. You want to have the ability to save to a data store somewhere in the cloud. Or, you know, but you also don't want to have to do that. You also, maybe you only want to save something locally, like say a game high score list if you're writing a game. You know, you can save it locally in your local storage, great, or you can do it. How would you do that? Writing JavaScript, how would you make those sort of decisions? historically, you'd have an if statement, and then you'd go, you make your rest call, or you'd then do your local storage call, or however else you were wanting to persist it. In here, what happens? Sorry, I'm probably going a little fast. If I'm moving around too fast, somebody yell out, okay? And anybody have any questions? Shoot them as well. So imagine here we've got samples, models. Oh, actually, I already had that open. So this is just a overly simple game. And by overly simple, I mean truly overly simple. Because it generates a score for you. So now I can submit the high score to the server. Oops, sorry. Max. Win windows. Don't play nicely. So, great. So that's submitted my score. You see it's done some stuff out there, and if you look at the database, you'd find that score's there. I do it again, generates another score, and I go, and great. But suppose you don't want to do that, in certain instances, or you don't have a network connection. Nowadays, you can have offline web apps. You might want to do something like that, so you just would go, play it again, and I don't want to submit the score this time. Needless to take in mind, this is a sample. It was a little naive. I didn't feel like trying to merge the two. That would be a lot of if statements, but how about you can write that with pretty much one if. We've got here, by using a mix-in, you determine if you want to use a REST or local storage. And that's it. And all of a sudden, you have a completely different backend, if only all code was so easy to change. And that's simple. You're programming to an interface without really having an interface, because later on you call a save that then decides which class that it's using, and it does that for you. So, yeah, that's making a decision, and it's mixing something in, and you can do that with anything. You could have any number of options. And the cool thing is, I don't know if that would be particularly useful in like a Windows 8 app, or if you use Node.js, I doubt anybody is, but again, all of a sudden you can share your models across boundaries. You can share it in your client, in your browser, and you can have your database store or your REST store that you're calling if it's in the client, or your direct call to the data, whatever database that you'd be using, simply by mixing these things in. So yeah, that's all that is. Oh, that's why I was losing the data. Well, I powered through that, y'all. Sorry. It sounded a lot longer in my head. So again, I can't really stress enough when you've got the concept of modules. Just by adding in things. So here, as in for the model sync, you've got an add statement that's basically establishing namespaces and what your model name is. And then you give it the details that you need. Was there a hand? It's really difficult to see out there. No? Okay. It's pretty terrible, y'all. Oh, my apologies. Yep. All your projects start to be delivered with jQuery and stuff like that. What as a jQuery developer, how can we start using things like this? I know you mentioned earlier sort of there's stuff available. Absolutely, absolutely. If you look, actually, you could actually use YUI. There's no reason they play nicer together. You can use, if you go to the Require.js site, which I am not particularly sure of. But yeah, there is actually a dedicated tutorial on here for using jQuery right off the bat. So, yeah, targeted jQuery tutorial. And again, that would be my, if you're really that committed to jQuery, you've got a lot of legacy code you've got to keep around, and you want to start introducing these sort of things, yeah, something like require. There's a few other ones as well. Requires probably is an effort to standardize it. So, and again, if you use, like I said, if you've done any Node.js development as well, it's a very similar syntax to what's offered on the server. And again, it's about declaring dependencies and then bringing them in and keeping everything nice and neatly sandboxed. I mean, you know, for goodness sakes, there are inversion of control systems for JavaScript now. You know, there's no reason, and then which allows you to, again, much like you would with dependency injection for C#, you know, you can pull things in on the fly just by, you know, making a few config changes and whatnot. So there's no reason, again, there's no reason not to attack JavaScript with the same discipline that you attack C# or VB or anything. So I said require would probably be the biggest used out there when it comes to, admittedly, modules are still probably an edge case. Well, I wouldn't say an edge case. They are gaining traction, and they're gaining traction quickly, especially when there is now talk that it's going to be brought in to ECMAScript 6, I believe. Still some debate and still some nasty, ugly syntax from what I've seen. But, it is coming to the language natively eventually. If it's going to catch on, I don't know. But, yeah, it's... I can't stress enough to... It's that discipline that you put in your code. And, again, it makes it easy. It's a lot easier to change a 20-line code file than it is to change a 320-line code file. Anybody else? Yes. I can flesh it out a touch. Basically what it allows you to do, you separate out your designs. You don't have, again, like I say, when you talk about your flow of a page, things like, you know, you've got a comment list. You know, you've got usually like a picture of someone, comments, and maybe something at the bottom. Very common layout. And it's not just in comments. You might have the big one in the footer. You might have other stuff on the side. Very similar. You've got a picture, text, something at the bottom. And again, it's about separating out as much as possible the layout of the particular instance versus the layout in general. So all of a sudden, Facebook, they actually implemented something similar. In fact, it was during a audit, basically, of the CSS that Facebook used. They implemented something similar to OCSS. The lady that actually came up with it did this for them, and they reduced the CSS and the HTML they were serving down massively. So, unfortunately, with OCSS, it's one of those things that there's not a lot of talking out there about it. The people that are doing it do it and swear by it. I've seen some great samples of it, but I don't have a lot of experience at it. There's also another system, very similar, called SMAX, SMACSS, I think two S's, written by one of the guys at Yahoo, or at least I think he used to be at Yahoo. Actually, both OOCSS and SMAX came from people that worked at Yahoo. It's a modular system for CSS. You write your CSS like normal, but you just think about the rules, and you don't use things like IDs. That's a very big specificity hammer. You know, that's going to rule out everything else, so you want it to flow a little bit more. So it's just about controlling and thinking about your layouts.